KSIV now presents Encounter, a public service program of Bot Radio Network, dedicated to keeping you informed about the issues that affect your life. Now, here's today's Encounter broadcast.
How do you get a quality education if you don't have a whole lot of money? And how do you get through the low points in your life? My guest, Dr. Roger Blackwell, wrote a book called You Are Never Alone. His experiences will be an inspiration to you and may answer some of those questions that you've been longing to get answers for in your life. I'm Judy Redlich. Let's meet Dr. Blackwell, hear his amazing story, and realize how Jesus Christ brought him through to where he is today as an example for us in our own lives. Dr. Blackwell, welcome to Encounter.
Well, thank you. I am always glad to be back home in Missouri.
In Missouri. Yes, you were born in Southwest Missouri. In fact, that was the first time that you narrowly escaped death, wasn't it?
I did. It was in a town where only people in that area know it's a town existed called Humansville, Missouri. And I was born dead there, without oxygen for 45 minutes. And when they finally got me resuscitated, and it was a little Humansville's not a very large city. I mean, it's a couple thousand people, maybe. And there was one doctor and one nurse, and it was my grandmother, maternal grandmother, and my dad that resuscitated me after I'd been without oxygen for 45 minutes. And the doctor said that was a mistake. You'll be so brain damaged, you should have never done that. Well, my dad always told the story. He said, well, he wondered how he would have turned out if he hadn't been brain damaged.
Yes.
I didn't get the rest of the story of how that happened. It's kind of unusual. In the book, You Are Not Alone. And I wasn't supposed to be here in the eyes of the doctors who declared me dead, the doctor and the nurse, but God had another plan.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I guess he said, well, okay, you know, I got you through this, and we got some things for you to do in your life. And so that's the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey used to say.
You grew up in a small Missouri town, and your father had as much, if not more, initiative, which he passed on to you to make you who you are today. Give a thumbnail sketch about your growing up life.
Well, he did. He grew up on a farm in Missouri also, and he didn't have any money and didn't have an education, but he started to go to Southwest Missouri State when he could. He started work at 17 and got his college degree 13 years later. And that's how you can do it. Don't let anybody think you have to go away to some fancy school, and don't think that they have to have a lot of money or IQ or anything else. I mean, I'm sure my dad was quite smart, but he managed to save from his $20 a month income teaching in Hickory County, Missouri, which at that time was the poorest county in the state. And he saved a little bit, went to school a little bit, and after 13 years, he got his college degree. And then he went on to get a PhD. And that allowed him to teach in high school when he got the undergraduate degree. And then he did summers at the University of Missouri and got a master's degree. And then got a college teaching position and then went back when I was in high school to the University of Missouri and got his doctor's degree there at Columbia. And so, you know, he and my family have been around Missouri much of my life, and there's all their life, basically. And it's persistence, perseverance. I almost invented a new word there, persistence.
Persistence.
Yeah. But the reality is, where there is a will, there is a way. Tell you can't do something, because you can if you have knowledge. And if you don't have the knowledge, I know how you can get it. And because you have the belief or the vision that you can do it. And that's things that happened throughout my life. You know, I could have been a Missouri farm boy, or I could have been a PhD.
Absolutely.
God had a plan for me.
So your father taught in a one-room schoolhouse without a college degree, didn't he?
Yes, that's Missouri was one of the last two states to permit people with a high school degree to teach in elementary school without even going to college. And he qualified, and that was back during the Great Depression.
What are some tips you could give kids today? You just shared about you don't have to have a lot of money to get an education. So where do they start?
At the local library. You know, Harry Truman didn't get a college education. And many historians now regard him as the president who made more historic decisions than any president since probably Lincoln, really, but certainly since World War II. And how did he get that education? He just read a lot of books. If you've ever seen pictures of the White House in the Oval Office when Truman was president, there's stacks of books everywhere, and he actually read them. He's the one who said, all readers are not leaders, but all leaders are readers. And that's what happened with him. And he made tough decisions. Like you might say, oh, you're dropping the bomb. Well, that was only one of them. He is the reason Europe didn't go communist. He is the reason South Korea exists. He is the reason that Israel was recognized by the U.S. as an independent nation when everybody, including the State Department, said, don't do it. And he and his former Jewish business partner sat and studied the Bible and said, no, this is the right thing to do. And that's why Israel was recognized when it was. It might have taken another 40 or 50 years if it hadn't been for Harry Truman.
You met Harry Truman by jumping on his running board of his Cadillac to get an interview.
I did. In Bolivar, Missouri, they were having a parade, and he was featured in the parade, and it was a hot day. In southern Missouri, it was over 100 degrees, and there was a vapor lock in the Secret Service car just in front of the president's convertible. And I had met this young lieutenant who was in charge of the National Guard patrolling the area, and they had ropes so that nobody could get up close, but I went under the rope and jumped up on the running board, and the other, one of the soldiers, tried to stop me, and the lieutenant said, no, that's okay. And I jumped up on the board and said, hello, Mr. President. I'm from Missouri, and I'd like to say hello to you. And we talked for maybe 10 minutes or so, maybe a little more, until somebody, because it was a vapor lock. Now, only your older listeners will know what that is. But somebody went and got some water and put in the radiator of the Secret Service car, and they got started again. But in the meantime, I had my conversation with President Truman. And I learned a lot from that and kept a track of, you know, his philosophy that if you don't have much education, doesn't mean you're not educated. One of, you know, the nation's top neurosurgeon, the world's top neurosurgeon, is Dr. Ben Carson. Separates Siamese twins and all these things. Well, his mother couldn't read and didn't know his father. And so she took him to the library and had them read books even though she couldn't read herself. And he learned to read. And that's how he became the world's best neurosurgeon. And you don't have to settle for not being educated just because you don't go to schools. Local libraries are a lot cheaper.
So how has COVID changed the learning styles of people today in your estimation?
Well, it has helped the good ones and hurt the bad ones. If you talk to teachers in urban schools especially, and I'm not as familiar with exactly how it's worked in rural schools, but in urban schools, what happened is the good students got a lot more attention. They were there all the time. They were had independent studies. The teachers online were helping them more and more than they would normally get. And the poor students just didn't show up. And so what we've done, COVID has done, is caused the inequality of education to be even greater because the good ones do better. I used to teach online when I was at Ohio State also, and that's one of the things I said, well, can you really learn online? The average score on tests was about the same online as it was in person classes. But the the dispersion around the mean statistical term was much greater for online. And the reason is because good students, they do extra work, they get extra knowledge, they do very well online. The poor students don't get around to looking into the lectures online until the night before the test. And so the good ones do better, the bad ones do worse. And that certainly happened during COVID.
Life isn't always fair, is it?
It's not fair. It is. It may be predictable, but it's not fair. I've come close to being not here a time or two from some things that have happened to me. But one of the worst things that happened that I don't regard as fair, but it happened, I was on top of the world. I was a professor at Ohio State, and I had speaking engagements. I'd written 30-something books that were used all over the world, in Russian and Portuguese and Spanish. They were translated into a lot of languages. And nice home, nice cars, everything was good. Wards, teaching, all that kind of stuff. And a few months later, I was in prison, and I was sleeping on a steel bed. They call it a bed, but it's really just a steel plate. They call it a mattress, but it's just really a little quarter-inch cotton pad on top of a steel plate. And I won't go into all the details. The book, You Are Not Alone, explains how that happened. I didn't do anything wrong. In fact, if I had not obeyed the law, I wouldn't have had to go to prison.
So, Dr. Blackwell, we're going to come back and tell people more about that story and much more about experiences that you've had that you hope can teach others how they can live through the low points as well as the high points in their life. I'm Judy Redlich. This is Encounter. We'll be right back. If you've listened to me at any time at all, or you've been friends with me, you know that I love to help people tell their story. Another thing I enjoy doing is helping people find their highest potential. If you're in a life's rut and you just can't figure out how to get past your stuck place, a life coach like me could help. Let me walk with you through your journey of transition. I'm a Christian life coach, and to find out more about my coaching, go to my coaching page at judyredlich.com or email me at jredlichspeaks@gmail.com. Dr. Roger Blackwell is my guest. We've been talking about some amazing things, how God spared his life several times. We've talked about learning and the importance of getting a quality education, even if you don't have the money. And just imagine if you were put in prison for something you didn't do, how would you handle it? Dr. Blackwell was just starting to tell us that story before the break. Dr. Blackwell, maybe you could give us a summary of what happened and how you got through the low points.
Sure. I was on several public boards of corporations like restaurants called Max and Irma's and Applied Industrial Technologies and Victoria's Secrets and Abercrombie and Fitch and a lot of these. But one of those was Worthington Foods. It was a health foods company, still is, and Kellogg wanted to buy us. And I didn't want to sell and didn't ever vote for it, but this was in 1999 when the tech stocks were going up, 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 and companies like that were going down in price. And the price was lower than it should be, so thousands of people bought the stock. And one of those was my secretary. And if I'd have told her, don't buy the stock because we're talking to Kellogg, that would have been illegal, but would have kept her from buying. Instead, she asked me one day, is something going on at Kellogg? And I said, I can't comment on it, which is what legally I was supposed to do. However, she and her husband bought stock because they'd been buying it for years and bought more of it in their IRA. Well, the prosecutor argued he could have told her, and she testified, no, he didn't. So she went to prison for 27 months, her husband 24 months, and I went to prison for 72 months. And I tell how that happened and so forth. But I didn't do anything wrong, but I still went to prison. And I really, when my son was taking me, and that's much better than having what they call diesel therapy going in, I thought, oh, how could this happen? God, how could you allow me to do it? And I just had this reassurance, I'll go with you, I will be with you, and he did. And in prison, I had the privilege of bringing a lot of people to Christ and talking to them about, well, I didn't know enough Spanish to teach the GED courses, which I was teaching, and I learned enough that I taught them. And these were former gang members and drug dealers and everything, and so many of them became Christians that they wanted to have a fiesta. And our instructor, the staff member, who the prison guard, allowed us to do that because she said, I'm so appreciative because you've helped these guys get their GED. Now, she didn't say this, but I was appreciative because they had become Christians, and they were appreciative enough that they had a fiesta one day, and she let us do that in the classroom, which is very unusual. But I understand, when I first had become a Christian and got out of graduate school, I thought about being a missionary in a foreign field, but I couldn't do that because I was just starting my career, just got my PhD from Northwestern and so forth. I think God said, okay, you didn't do that back then. We still have time. And during prison, I basically used my time to learn myself about things I didn't know about, like crime and drugs and stuff like that, that I can write about now. And I think the greatest thing was I got the privilege of learning more about those things, but helping people discover more about Jesus. That's worth it. A lot of people said, was it worth it? Yeah. I saw enough people become Christians. If I lost my job and lost my retirement and all that sort of thing, that's worth it. To see a few people become Christians is worth more than any job or status or things like that. But I had many other experiences all through life that were very, very rewarding. 65,000 students at Ohio State that I taught. I think that's more than probably anybody in the country.
That's amazing. 65 students, and your classes were always full, weren't they?
They were. The room, the classroom had 750 seats, and there was usually a waiting list to get in. And I taught it two or three times each year.
But you learned a valuable lesson. Fame and fortune tempt people to put self on the throne of life, leaving God only what is left.
That's absolutely right. And the thing that counts is whether you are eternally in God's plan, but you learn that going through life, and you learn to depend upon God. When I went to prison, I had defended God for years after I became a Christian, although I was not always a Christian. I became from atheism into Christianity because of logic and C.S. Lewis and Bayesian statistics and things that I explained in there. But God allows you to go through low points in life because sometimes that's the only way he can teach you lessons. And in prison, I learned to defend, not just defend God, but to depend on God. And there's a big difference. A guy in the cell next to me had a shank, and he said, I got your back, Blackwell, and I'd rather have God having my back. The Holy Spirit really is better than a guy with the cell next to you on a shank. But it was an experience, and I try to relate some of that. And people sent me books. I learned things there that I never had. And that's one of the things that many Missourians know. The richest family in the world is a Missouri family. It's called Waltons. And Sam Walton started, how did he get the money to start the world's biggest corporation? And the answer, by working at JCPenney and a couple other retailers for about 25 years. And he and Helen, his wife, saved enough every month that they could start the world's largest retailer. And it only had 7 employees. And every Saturday morning they got together at 7:30, because the store opened at 8, and he asked those 7 employees, what books have you read lately that would make our firm manage better than other firms? And, of course, he started taking those ideas. You see, if you only know what you, if you don't read other books, you only know what you know. And Sam Walton said, I'm not too smart. I'm just a Missouri farm boy. But there's a whole lot of smart people in the world, and they write books. And when I read their books, I know what the smart people know. And you know what? Most of my competitors don't. And he was totally right. A lot of those were had little stores and big stores like Sears and Penny's even. And if they don't read the books, they don't know what the other people know, and so they get put out of business. And that happened. And he created the world's largest corporation and the world's wealthiest family. And that's one of the advantages of reading books. And if you read enough books, you get the same thing you get in a college. Now, I've written a whole lot of textbooks. I've written 40 books. This book, You Are Not Alone, is my 40th book. Many of them are used in countries all over the world in different languages and so forth. And I'll tell you something. The least prestigious school in America uses the same textbook as Harvard does. You might say, how do you know that, Roger? Well, because I wrote some of those. And you get that. I went to Northwest Missouri State in Maryville. It didn't cost much because I lived at home for the first part of my career. Then I transferred the last year to Missouri. I never had a dollar of debt. My parents never paid a dollar on my... Don't let anybody tell you you have to have money to education, to get an education. You don't. You do have to have persistence, and you have to have enough knowledge to do well, and you get that from books. And also, sometimes you become the world's richest family if you read enough books and apply it enough, as Sam Walton did.
You Are Never Alone, Dr. Roger Blackwell's book. And what tips do you give people on getting through the low points of life?
Well, I hope we have a whole lot of people listening who are in high points. And the answer is getting close to God in the high points in your life gives you the strength to go through the low points. Now, if you're in a low point and you've never known God, it's never too late to turn to Him. But in the last chapter of this book, I use what Billy Graham used, same prayer he used all over the world, to invite God into your life, admitting that you're a sinner and that you have failed and will fail. But if this is what I did in my life in a church in Dallas, Texas, once, and God came into my life, cured my atheism, if you will, and actually came into my life in a way that He was with me all the rest of the time. And in the last chapter of this book, I invite people to do that if they haven't. I also invite everybody who's listening to get close to God and know how to depend upon Him in the good times, because you can depend upon Him then in the bad times or the low times.
Absolutely. Great advice. Psalm 46 says, God is our refuge and strength, the very present help in time of trouble. So whether you're in the high points, the low points, He is there for you. Dr. Roger Blackwell wrote the book, You Are Not Alone. How can people get a copy of your book?
Amazon pretty much is the way to do it today. I mean, there are some bookstores that carry it, but there aren't very many bookstores left. So Basically, and I have a website called RogerBlackwellBusiness.com. And if they go there, they'll see a description of this book as well as the other book I've read. For anybody who wants to grow their business or to get a business to be more profitable, the book before this, which was also published by a Christian publisher called Union Hill, and that book, Saving America, is also described on the website. And anybody looks at the website and punches a button on there, it takes them to their own Amazon, and Amazon is the easiest way to get it, frankly.
What tips do you have for cutting down on crime in our nation?
Well, there shouldn't be anybody surprised that we have more crime today. There's direct correlation with crime and church attendance. When church attendance goes down, crime goes up. And that's been true not only here, but over the last few hundred years in places like England and France and Germany and lots of places. And church attendance has been going down, so you should expect crime to go up. Now, there are other reasons for crime, too, of course. But when people don't have a reason for being, they have to follow something, and they often follow things that are not very satisfying. Pascal said, every person has a God-shaped vacuum in their heart, and they will struggle until they find that. And right now we have people who are struggling to do something meaningful instead of going to church on Sunday. One of the things that you can do to help yourself is to have some rules to live by. And in the last part of this book, I actually put in the Rogers rules of getting a successful life. And I believe if anybody follows them, they'll have a successful life.
You are not alone. Get a copy of that book. Roger D. Blackwell is the author. Thanks for sharing part of your life's experiences with us.
Oh, well, thanks for letting me come back to Missouri with you.
Well, there you go. We are glad to have you come back to the Show Me State and the other states where this broadcast will air. And you can, again, get this book at Amazon.com. You are not alone. Remember, Jesus Christ is always with you. Putting him first is the only way to get through life. I'm Judy Bredlich. This is Encounter.
Encounter is you and the issues, where the facts and opinions make you an informed citizen of St. Louis. Thank you for your participation. Let a friend know about this talk and issues feature of Bot Radio Network and KSIV. Then join us next time for Encounter.